So good morning, good day, maybe even some of you good evening actually. I'd like to share some thoughts on clear comprehension in daily life. Clear comprehension of purpose is the reason for which we do something. Understanding why we do what we do. As I mentioned before, it can be helpful to take time to periodically reflect on our long-term purpose, to use the intelligence of the mind to clearly reflect on our deepest aspirations. Why are we on the path? Maybe write it down, refine it, keep it close to us in our lives. I've often found it helpful to reflect on this daily at the beginning of each formal meditation period, and then to be really clear what my more immediate purpose is at the beginning of my meditation. It helped me a lot in my own tendency to spend the first 15 minutes of each sitting with flailing around with a lot of aimless thinking. And when we keep our larger purpose close to us, we can use it as a reference point in our lives. Are our actions aligned with this purpose? For instance, if my deepest aspiration is to be at peace, it becomes clear that arguing in an agitated manner, trying to convince someone of my point of view, is not aligned with my deepest aspiration. When we're agitated and clinging to a point of view, there's no communication going on. This is suffering. And it's important to recognize the suffering in an argument and that it's not aligned with the intention of being at peace. So when we want to accomplish something, we have to figure out what to do to accomplish it. What's suitable for our purpose? What are the steps needed? Whether it's a long-term aspiration or more immediate purposes. I like to consider what's practical. What are we actually likely to do? I had a student that was struggling to establish daily practice. He had this idealized version of what his meditation should be every day. And he wanted to be sitting on the floor every morning, cross-legged in this beautiful meditation spot he created. Now, having young children at home, time and time again, things came up. And then between the family needs and lack of sleep, he'd only managed the occasional meditation. As we explored what might work for him, he saw he had to let go of this ideal of sitting in his beautiful spot. He ended up developing a very strong, steady practice by meditating at work in his office, which was a little bit more sterile. He was much more easily able to carve out uninterrupted time there. Sometimes some of us can set the bar too high, which can sabotage us. What's practical for us? What stretches us just a little bit, just a little past that edge of our comfort? In yoga, for instance, when we stretch our body, we stretch it to the edge. We don't go beyond the edge to break it. We don't strain. We don't hurt ourselves. We just go to that edge where we're not completely 100% comfortable. But there's that edge where we grow. And then after a while, there's a new edge. And it's I think that works really well to consider our purposes or goals with this respect for our edges. Some people can set a bar really high, and that's what moves them. In clear comprehension of pasture in our daily lives, we ask, where do we get our nourishment to carry out our purposes? If our larger purpose is freedom or peace, do we get nurtured by doom scrolling the news? Can we clearly see the difference between being informed and the compulsive quality of doom scrolling? Do we get nourished by spending 2 hours going from one thing to another on the internet? Maybe we should start referring to it as the monkey net in honor of monkey mind. Maybe we can call a good friend, might be more nourishing, or going for a walk, or maybe sitting to meditate. When we do our chores in our life with mindfulness, they are no longer unfortunate burdens, but they actually become the ground of nourishment for us. So if we really hate cleaning the bathroom, maybe we could bow to the toilet before we clean it. It can bring us to the pasture of practice and nourishes us. As we continue to bring mindfulness more deeply into our daily lives, sometimes what's suitable is the simplest aspect of clear comprehension, which is recognition, knowing we're rising from our chair, knowing we're walking to the kitchen, knowing we're about to cook something. This is the practice of non-delusion. We're seeing what's here, recognizing what's here. Those moments of seeing without judgment, without trying to change anything, are moments of non-delusion. And the simple practice of showing up for things just as they are matures over time into the deeper wisdom that the practice brings us. When we're paying attention, it's much easier to notice when we're clinging. We're no longer at ease. It's so obvious when we're actually present, when we cling to something. Maybe we notice clinging once we're well into the middle of an argument. We find ourselves just clinging to a point of view. We can recognize it, step back from it. That moment of recognition is non-delusion. It's a moment of freedom. We can appreciate it instead of getting caught up in the fact that we blew in, we got all pissed in an argument. Each time we clearly see our clinging and see the suffering it's causing us, we can incline to let it go, to see the release of it. And we weaken the chains that bind us. As mindfulness and clear comprehension become more established in our daily lives, we can be at home in our homes. We can be at home in our skin. At home in the world. We can be at home even when we're challenged. Or even if we find ourselves clinging desperately, or if we find ourselves smiling with an open heart. So I'd like to end with a writing from George Bernard Shaw that has inspired me, where he talks about his highest aspiration. This is the true joy in life, the being used for a purpose, recognized by yourself as a mighty one. The being a force of nature instead of a feverish, selfish little clod of ailments and grievances, complaining that the world will not devote itself to making you happy. I am of the opinion that my life belongs to the whole community, and as long as I live, it's my privilege to do for it whatever I can. I want to be thoroughly used up when I die. For the harder I work, the more I live. I rejoice in life for its own sake. Life is no brief candle to me. It's a sort of splendid torch which I've got hold of at the moment, and I want to make it burn as brightly as possible before handing it on to future generations. So thank you all. And I'll pass the microphone, I think, to Gail next.
Thank you, Inez, and George Shaw. That was a nice quote. And passing the flame on to the next generation and working in a community, working within the community. You know, at this time in the retreat, I often feel quite inspired by what we've done. And inspired by the whole context that has come together over these many years to make things like this retreat possible. And I've been doing this IMC thing for a few decades now. And as I was this morning thinking about this retreat coming to the end, I remember I was thinking about kind of how it began for me and with different ways of seeing beginnings. But the first time I had contact with a small sitting group that became IMC, small sitting group in Palo Alto, met in a small little, I don't know what to call it. I think they call it a library. It didn't have that many books, but this little room in a church in Palo Alto, and I had been asked to come and take it over because the person who coordinated, not wasn't a teacher for it, I had gotten cancer and he couldn't do it anymore. And so I was new to town and I was asked to kind of take over. So I said, well, okay, well, I'll come and check, you know, see it once or something. So the first time I came to sit in the back of the little room and see what goes on there. There was 12, 15 people there, and I sat in the back. I don't remember that well, but I think I showed up in blue jeans and a t-shirt and drove up in my 13-year-old red Toyota Celica, an old car that had been given to me recently. And I had no idea that when I got out of that car and walked into that little room that I'd never been to before, that this would grow to become what we have now at IMC, IRC, on this on IMO, IRO, Insight Retreat Online. And so many people all over such a huge, huge community of people that make it all possible. It's a beautiful flame. It's a beautiful flame of goodness, of people being so generous, and I just inspired by all the people who have stepped forward to offer their efforts, offer their care and attention to so many of the details that we need and have, and what goes on and it still goes on, all the attention to detail. I'm kind of blown away by all we do, all that goes on. I can't track it all anymore. And I think yesterday I was shown or explained to me that if you go on the Audio Dharma app, there's now its own category. There is all the talks given in Spanish, so it's like really easy to access, and a lot of Spanish-speaking people don't. In the United States, not a lot, but a good number of them don't have computers. So getting it off their phone and app works really well. Wow, someone did that. Someone figured out how to get in there and develop it and change it and make it available that way. And then looking at this, you know, retreat center, the IRC meditation hall. And, you know, when I'm literally there, I'll sometimes look around. I can't help but to see all these details. And I know the people involved and who researched it, had conversations about it, and talked about it. And just all these volunteers who kind of put so much love into all the details. I don't think there's any details at IRC except for a few things left over from when we bought it, that there wasn't love behind the thinking of it and the planning of it and all that. It's just phenomenal that we have this. And then there's so much support for what we do, support for IRC, IMC, everything. That it's like Bernard Shaw says, you know, it's like a flame. It's a beautiful flame. Or I like maybe think of it a light. It's a beautiful light that's kind of, we're in the stream of the light. We're kind of like in the flow of this goodness. And it's my hope that I like to talk about a little bit at the end of the retreat, because it's one of the nourishments. It's one of the things to that's supporting us and inspiring us. And I hope that this inspires you to be part of this bright light or this flame, and not because you need to, but because it's just such a beautiful thing to do. It's probably in your heart already to live a life of gratitude, joy, goodness. All your goodness, may, you know, for you to share it with the world and keep this flame and light going, and just keep growing and going. And I think we're so fortunate to be in this huge Dharma momentum that we have here, and that I joined 30 years ago, and now some of you are joining now, maybe the first time this retreat, and some of you have been part of it for so long. And I just feel like we're so lucky. And so lucky that we are able to share it with so many people. So thank you very, very much for offering your practice into this beautiful Dharma stream that we have, and your goodness and being here. It's a huge thing. It's, you know, people notice that these retreats who aren't here, people who don't do these retreats are inspired by them, and gives them hope, gives them a sense of possibility, gives them inspiration, and gives them a direction. Someday I can do that. So even though, you know, you sat with your knee pain and back pain and maybe occasionally distracted thought mind, and you can't imagine what good is this for the world, but actually just the fact that you're here and engaged in the practice, doing the best that you could, and there are people out there who are inspired by this. And so thank you. And so let's continue and keep inspiring ourselves, being inspired ourselves and inspiring others, and continuing this, to pass on this beautiful light that we have here. Thank you. So I think the managers have some announcements. So, Kristen?
Thanks, Gil. On behalf of the retreat support team, it's been a pleasure to support this retreat. Here are a few announcements to help ease your transition. A few minutes after closing circle finishes, you are welcome to stay for social time with one another. The managers will host it.
IRC was founded and continues to thrive because of the generosity of our volunteers, teachers, and donors. We appreciate all donations. See the green box on this retreat's website to donate today, or use the regular IRC website's donation page. The link to the poem Inez read on the first evening reflection is on the online announcement section, which should sort of be on the right side of the screen on the Insight Retreat online screen. Next on the schedule is meditation space cleaning, which was done offline. And then we'll meet back here for the closing circle at 11 a.m. Thank you.
So, well, I guess we didn't talk about who's supposed to speak next. We just had a little plan that Inez would speak and I would speak and Kristen would speak, and she did her job, but no one was supposed to speak after that. So maybe that's a profound thing. Maybe we just let it be that way, and appreciate that it gives us a little bit more silence before the end, and appreciate that we're, you know, making this up as we go along, not always sure what we're doing. So let's take our break. And we designated this time as meditation room cleaning. For those of you who've never been to IRC, we have wonderful times at IRC where all of us are kind of working together at the same time. And at the end, it's to clean IRC up and prepare it to leave it in good shape. And so the idea was to have something comparable, during this retreat. So it's kind of a nice feeling to think that if you're cleaning your meditation space, cleaning up from your week, that probably a lot of other people from the retreat are doing the same thing right now. So we're doing it together. And so we'll take this time now for that or whatever else you feel like you need to do. And then we'll, as Kirsten said, we'll meet back here at 11 for the final closing session. Thank you.